and at Trader Joe's on Instagram.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we're going to talk about a health problem that's being experienced by some of the U.S. military who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But first, seven listener calls about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we talked about a variety of things, including the ongoing NFL protest and President Trump's administration's response to Puerto Rico. Here's what seven listeners had to say.
This is Dottie in St. Petersburg. There are many people who belong to a religion that does not honor any holiday or birthdays, and I believe they also do not salute the flag, any flag. When I see people take a knee, I think of somebody praying, being reflective. There are many people in the stands who do not stand or do not sing or do not put their hands on their heart. It's totally irresponsible to pick on just the ball players for showing their feelings.
This is Meg from St. Petersburg. In reference to Puerto Rico and Maria, I question why our government didn't prepare Puerto Rican aid ahead of Maria. Clearly, as a Category 5 hurricane, Maria was going to decimate the island. How many other hurricane examples have we had not to know what the aftermath would be? We have seen so many other islands severely impacted from this hurricane season alone. So why didn't the government use foresight to head off and avoid the extreme humanitarian emergency Puerto Rico is currently suffering? The government dragged their feet. And Puerto Ricans are American citizens. It's disgraceful.
Yes, I listened to your program, and at the end of the program, a man made a comment about Mike Brown, the shooting of Mike Brown in Ferguson. And I just want to say that, to my memory, the policeman who shot Mike Brown had no idea of anything involving Mike Brown at the little grocery store. He didn't know anything about that. What happened between him and Mike Brown took place on that street, and that's why they left his body lying so long for 4 hours, because they were trying to figure out the lie they would come up with. And I guess they told a good lie to satisfy that sorry Eric Holder, so-called Obama Attorney General. Second thing, I say that any player can be shot with impunity at any time. All those guys who are praying and kneeling, they can walk out of the stadium wherever they are, and a policeman, a special vice policeman, can shoot any of those football players in cold blood and get away with it. All he got to say is that he was afraid for his life. And that's what happens over and over again. The last thing I would say is that the shooting with a man, the last police shooting that was notarized, and the judge let him go. They had the tape recording of the guy, the policeman said, I'm going to kill that nigga, I'm going to shoot that nigga, and he still got away with it. And the judge said, well, you know, people say things when they in the fear of anger. So they got a good cause, the young men who are kneeling at football games, they got a good cause to be doing what they're doing. I'm 76 years old, and I did my share in the 1960s, and God bless all these young men for standing up for what's right. Thank you, Rob, very much.
Hi, this is Mike from Sarasota, and I just want to make a comment about other people saying that you have the right to say whatever you want at work. That's not really true. Most of us don't have freedom to say whatever we want at work. I know people who work in the real estate business, and there's sales involved, and so all the people in the real estate business are urged not to make political statements or even religious statements over fear that it might offend some of the clients. If I get on the bus, I don't think the bus driver has the right to get on the microphone and, with me as a captive audience, start expressing his political viewpoints. Same way with a postman. So I think there are limits. And in regards to Colin Kaepernick or NFL players having the right to say whatever they want at football games, the thing is, they're not being paid to make political statements. They are being paid to be on that field to play football. And so their right to do whatever they want out there and say whatever they want is not really all that absolute. Matter of fact, I think it's an owner would be within their rights to stop a player from saying thing. I mean, in this case, it happens to be an opinion that's largely popular, but if a player was making a very unpopular opinion, say offering a Sieg Heil salute or something like that, owners could rightfully fire that person, and everybody would appreciate it.
Hi, this is Teresa. First of all, the guy in the White House, or Republicans in general, don't care if people starve and die in this country. They're sure not going to care if people starve and die in Puerto Rico. That's why the response is so slow. Second, all this NFL, people kneeling. I've heard through the week different comments, and they seem to think that these guys make a lot of money, so it's like they don't have a right to protest. Yeah, you do. And it doesn't matter where you protest, and white people really need to stop telling African Americans how they're supposed to protest, why they're supposed to protest, and when they're supposed to protest, especially all the white males that have been commenting. African Americans have had a struggle in this country since the beginning of it. Slavery, Jim Crow laws, and today, African American people, kid walking down the street, committing no crime, get shot. The guy in Minnesota does exactly what the cop says, and he shoots him anyway. So I think we as white Americans need to stand with them and tell them they have our support. And I was glad to see that a lot of the owners and a lot of the other players in the NFL and some in the other sporting teams doing the same thing. And that makes me very proud.
This is Jeff in Tampa. I'm just calling to leave a comment regarding the NFL players taking the knee during the national anthem. I just wanted to tell you, hats off to the high school teacher, Catherine, who called in regarding the debate. I agree 100% with her articulate, eloquent, very well-worded, and heartfelt point of view. Additionally, it is truly a travesty that Tallahassee doesn't better fund in public schools when we clearly have excellent teachers such as Catherine. And thanks for the great program, Rob. Keep up the good work.
Some of the listener comments that we got after yesterday's program. Well, there's a new documentary film out about the U.S. military burn pit operations that go on in Iraq and Afghanistan. A burn pit refers to an area in the military and a military site devoted to open-air combustion of waste. And according to veterans who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, every type of waste is disposed of and burned, including batteries, metals, paint, appliances, medicine, plastics, dead animals, even human body parts. The resulting pollutants have resulted in numerous health issues among soldiers who were exposed. The film that describes what happens to soldiers who were exposed to burn pits is called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers, and here is the trailer.
A mysterious illness is affecting veterans who were exposed to open burn pits, which the U.S. military used in Iraq and Afghanistan to torch everything from batteries to body parts.
Your nose would burn, your eyes would water, your throat would burn.
You would have to go and dust yourself off, your hair, your clothing, with all the ashes that were falling on us.
The operation of the burn pits was exposing troops to the worst toxins known to man.
It was really, really ill. Disgustingly ill.
The symptoms are anywhere from respiratory issues, some mild to severe, to rare forms of cancers.
I'm convinced that the burn pits are causing illness among these soldiers.
That is what we live next to.
The military knew all along that this toxic exposure could very well hurt the troops.
They knew about this, and they continued to freaking do it. Why?
There was a complete denial, I think, at all levels of government.
There seems to be an ongoing struggle between the truth seekers and the government.
Every single time there's a war, we do this song and dance with the government.
What is our future gonna be like? What does it hold? It's just gonna get worse.
Well, that's the trailer to a new documentary called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. And the director of the film, Gregory Lovett, joins us right now from Holland. Gregory, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Hi, how are you? Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Gregory, people couldn't see the faces of the soldiers who were depicted in that film. Can you describe what some of the soldiers in that trailer that we just heard looked like?
Well, in particular, you might recall that there was one soldier who spoke that you could not really understand. That's a former Marine Sergeant Brian Alvarado in Los Angeles, and he is so sick that he actually has a tracheostomy in a feeding tube, so he can't speak, he can't eat. Some of the other soldiers in the documentary have cancers, they have terminal lung diseases, so it's really a wide range of illnesses that are affecting these soldiers.
Describe a little bit more for us what a burn pit is and how burn pits are used in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, a burn pit is basically a dump, the kind of dump that I remember going to as a kid in the U.S. We would take our garbage to the dump, you know, every week, and that's been outlawed in the U.S. But the military didn't really know what to do with all the garbage that was being accumulated on the battlefield. Each soldier is estimated to create about 10 pounds of garbage per day, and all of that has to be disposed of. And so what they decided to do was to create these sometimes gigantic pits and throw all kinds of garbage into it. You mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's literally everything from plastic to metals to rubber to old ammunition and body parts, human waste, everything you could possibly think of. The only thing they could do was throw it into these huge pits, and they would set it on fire with jet fuel. Now, jet fuel in and of itself releases benzene, which is a carcinogen. So the result was this black cloud of smoke that hung over all of these bases. And soldiers talk about how they literally had to dust themselves off from all the ashes that were falling on them. And now doctors are talking about how some of these soldiers, they're discovering metal in their lungs. And this toxic exposure is just something that could have been prevented and is causing about 100,000 soldiers to become ill and dying.
How many burn pits would you say are in Iraq and Afghanistan? Any way to tell?
They're supposed to have stopped the practice now, but at the time when this was really going on during the peak years in around 2003, 4, 5, 6, 7, there was more than 200, almost 250. Every base had one. Some were relatively small, but some were the size of multiple football fields, and they were burning 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Now, here in the U.S., there are lots of regulations to protect workers, not always enforced, but usually, you know, the worker can point to the regulation and say, I'm not supposed to be exposed to this kind of chemical or this kind of smoke. I've got to have, you know, some sort of face mask or protection so it, you know, it doesn't get into my body. What does the military say to the soldiers who are on a base or living near or maybe, actually doing the burn pit? What does the military say to the soldiers about the potential for harm?
Well, the soldiers weren't offered any kind of protection whatsoever, and they were told that it was not dangerous. Even though we know that's not true, because I've seen a copy of a memo that was written back in 2006, an internal Air Force memo, in which Colonel Curtis was responsible for investigating the burn pits, and he called it the worst environmental site he'd ever seen, and he said this is going to result in illness if it's not cleared up. But that memo was buried and was not released by the Air Force, and even the soldiers on the ground were not exposed to it. They didn't know that this memo even existed. So the military has denied for years that there's any link between illness and the burn pits. They decided to conduct their own study a few years later, but that study was flawed because they only studied one burn pit. They put their testing apparatus downwind of the burn pit, so it was not an accurate study of what was going on. And even today, they still deny that there's any link between burn pits and illness, and that's why a lot of these soldiers are having trouble through the VA of getting the health treatment that they need.
When you burn metals or when you burn batteries or when you burn paint or solvents or plastics, that's a special kind of smoke that rises from those burning pits.
Yes, and they were not allowed to do that. In many cases, a private company named Kellogg Brown & Root who a lot of people may know as a subsidiary of Halliburton, they had the responsibility of managing many of these pits. And I've seen the contracts between KBR and the military, and it stated very clearly that they were supposed to meet all EPA regulations. Now, obviously, there's no EPA in Iraq and Afghanistan, but they were supposed to follow the same regulations as if these bases were a little piece of America over there. So they were not supposed to burn plastics and metals and rubber and paints and solvents and all these kinds of things. And they clearly did, in violation of their agreement.
Well, Gregory Lovett is our guest. He's the director of this film, Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. And Gregory, I understand you're trying to bring the film to the Tampa Bay area. Just describe what's going on about trying to get the film shown here somewhere in the Tampa Bay area.
Well, we're actually distributing this on a crowdfunding basis. That means that we can option the cinema, but we have to sell tickets in advance. So we have two dates in the Tampa area, the 19th in Tampa itself, and then November 1st in Brandon, which is just right side outside of Tampa. And we still have to sell about 60 tickets in order to confirm these screenings. We have about 2 weeks still to do that. So it's very important that if anybody is interested in seeing this documentary, that they go to my website, which is actually my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/burnpitsdocumentary. It's just one long word, Burn Pits Documentary. And just click on the banner that says buy tickets here, and you'll see a list of all the cities. But you can scroll down to Brandon or Tampa. And I'd really have to impress upon people that the tickets need to be sold in advance. If we want to get the word out about the burn pits, if we want to try to expose what was going on and try to help these soldiers, then I really need to put eyeballs in these cinemas. So I would really encourage everybody to go to my Facebook page and try to order a ticket for Brandon or Tampa so we can bring the documentary to you and hopefully, bring some knowledge and awareness to this really sad issue.
Greg, I've interviewed a lot of veterans over the years, atomic veterans, people that were exposed to atomic testing in the South Pacific and elsewhere, and also Agent Orange victims, people who were sprayed on in Vietnam, who came up with illnesses. And the most powerful thing they ever did in their lives, at least when it came to their illness, was they got together and talked to each other and formed groups and put pressure on the federal government to recognize their illness as service-connected and also a specific kind of illness. It wasn't just garden variety. It needed special treatment. Is there a group or has a group been formed around these soldiers who have been exposed to burn pits?
Yes, there are many groups formed by, in many cases, unfortunately, family members of the victims, because a lot of the victims have sadly passed away. So you have a lot of wives involved in groups, but also many, many soldiers themselves who are politically active. They've got Facebook pages. They've got websites. They are petitioning the government. They regularly go to Washington. They try to create awareness. And so they are doing the best that they can to try to, bring some justice to the situation.
Have you shown the film much around the country?
Not yet. It will actually be premiering October 9th in Los Angeles. And we have about 20 of these options right now at various cities from L.A. to, well, obviously, Tampa, Houston, New York, Washington, St. Paul, all over the area. And but obviously the big thing is that people need to buy tickets in advance. Some cities are more successful at that than others. But hopefully in Brandon and in Tampa, people listening will feel that this is an important subject and, will come out and order tickets.
So if the films are to be shown in Tampa, the deadline is a little less than 2 weeks from today. So again, if people want to go online and find out more about the film or maybe buy a ticket, how can they find out more?
Just go to my Facebook page. So that's obviously facebook.com and then Burn Pits Documentary, just one long word. So facebook.com/burnpitsdocumentary. There you will see clips from the documentary, interviews with some of the people that have appeared in the documentary, lots and lots of comments from soldiers and family members who have suffered because of this. And then, of course, a big banner that says buy tickets here. And you could click on that and you could scroll down to Brandon and Tampa and buy your ticket. If you can't go yourself, You can also buy a ticket. It's just an e-ticket. So you could buy a ticket and you could give it away to somebody else. So that's an option maybe for some people that can't attend personally.
And Greg, how did you, Gregory, how did you get interested in this in the first place?
Well, I actually read a book by a man named Joseph Hickman, who's in the documentary. I just happened to read a lot of nonfiction, and I stumbled upon this book probably about 2 years ago. And I was just shocked and amazed and mad and upset, you know, about this story. I'd never heard of it. And, you know, things about social justice kind of, you know, irritate me anyway. When I see things that I think are not fair, it really kind of irritates me. And I didn't really do anything for the first year because, even though I'm American, I live in Holland, so it's not really convenient to do a documentary in America, but nothing happened. I didn't hear anything. I finally tracked down Joseph Hickman, and he said nobody interviewed him. I figured that'd be the first place to go if you wanted to do a documentary, and if nobody had talked to him, they must not be making a documentary. So I just decided, well, I'm going to do it myself.
Gregory, let's take one call from a listener, if that's okay. Mary's in Winter Haven, and we're talking with Gregory Lovett, who's a director. He's got a new film out called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. He's talking about burn pits and their effect on soldiers who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. And Mary's in Winter Haven. Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm doing good. I was really interested to hear this. It sounds like a really important issue. One thing I wanted to suggest, and that's why I was calling, was if he's having problems getting enough people for the showings, that might be something that would be really good for a WMNF event. And do it through the radio station, because you guys probably have the power to get enough people for it.
Well, that's an interesting idea. We're trying to get the word out now, and hopefully Gregory will be successful on his own by getting the word out. But Mary, that might be an option.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Mary. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Preston. And by the way, thanks to Patty Perkey. She's our phone producer today. Hi, Preston. Where are you?
This is Chris. The call screener misunderstood me. Chris in St. Petersburg. Chris Steiner, St. Petersburg. Originally, I learned of the issue of these burn pits, including of biological weapons, over 100 in the documentary called Beyond Treason at beyondtreason.com that came out, I think, in 2005. And the sickness as part of the Gulf War syndrome that was uncovered by the late Joyce Riley, who just unfortunately, I much miss her, passed away in June. I knew her as a hostess of the Power Hour radio show, but you know, she broke the Gulf War syndrome issue and all the factors involved in it, including vaccines and other issues, back on Coast to Coast radio show. And how we sold to Saddam Hussein the biological weapons that's covered in the Regal report, Senator Don.
And Chris, do you have a question about burn pits?
Well, I don't. I just wanted to bring up that the Gulf War syndrome is caused partly by the burn pits, like at Kamacia. Maybe he'd want to comment on the burn pit at Kamacia that's so infamous.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot. Thanks for the phone call. Gregory Lovett, do you want to comment about anything that Chris said there?
Well, I have heard that before, that some of the Gulf War syndrome has probably been caused by the burn pits. He mentioned Saddam Hussein. It turns out that most of the illnesses caused by the burn pits were coming from 5 bases in Iraq. And these bases were known to have been storage facilities for Saddam Hussein's chemical weapons. And what the military did and what KBR did when they went in there, or what they didn't do, was do any kind of testing whatsoever. They didn't do any soil samples, for example, to find out how many chemicals or what kind of chemicals were still left in the soil. So it's very possible that these burn pits, which were then built on top of this radioactive waste, created even more problems for the soldiers. As a matter of fact, one man in the documentary, it's actually Joe Hickman, actually, in the documentary, said that he spoke to somebody from KBR who claimed that they knew the ground was hot, meaning they knew the ground was contaminated, and they built the burn pits on top of it anyway.
Have there been any congressional investigations?
There haven't really been any investigations. There have been hearings. There are some senators, like Tom Udall from New Mexico, who are trying to create awareness, and slowly but surely they're making a little bit of progress. But, for example, in the case of KBR, there's a lawsuit going, and it's been going for 8 years now, between the veterans and the company. And, you know, that's just going nowhere because, of course, as a Halliburton subsidiary, they have lots of money and they can stall things. So, I mean, there's not much help on the short-term horizon.
Well, Gregory Lovett, thanks for coming on WMNF. And again, you're trying to get the film shown on October 19th in Tampa and November 1st in Brandon. And you're hoping that people buy tickets ahead of time because that way the commercial theaters will then agree to show the film at least on those dates, and maybe more dates if a lot of people buy tickets. So again, if people want to buy tickets ahead of time, where can they go?
Go to facebook.com/burnpitsdocumentary. Just one long word. You'll see a big banner there that says, buy your tickets here. And then you can just scroll down to Brandon and Tampa, and you can order your tickets. And I hope people will do that right away.
Gregory Lovett, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Gregory. Bye-bye. Gregory Lovett's film is called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. And it looks at the issue of the health effects of people breathing in the air from burn pits that were operated for years in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM, and we're going to take some phone calls about this or any other news issue that's on your mind, and I'm going to suggest a few that we could talk about. According to Politico, the White House approved the use of military aircraft for multiple national trips by Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price to Africa and Europe this spring and to Asia in the summer at a cost of more than $500,000 to taxpayers. The overseas trips bring the total cost to taxpayers of Price's travels to more than $1 million since May, according to a Politico review. Now, HHS Secretary Price pledged yesterday to reimburse the government for the cost of his own seat on his domestic trips using private aircraft. That cost is reportedly around $52,000, but would not include the cost of the military flights. Price's wife, Betty, accompanied him on the military flights while other members of the secretary's delegation flew commercially to Europe. The HHS says Price has reimbursed the agency for the cost of his wife's travel abroad, but declined to say when he did so. Price has been under intense criticism since Politico revealed his extensive use of charter aircraft for domestic flights last week. So we could talk about that, too. The president, of course, has promised a new way of doing business in Washington, D.C., so we could talk about the HHS secretary and his $1 million in travel on private and military airplanes since May. We could do that. 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. Two protests are scheduled here in the Tampa Bay area this weekend against the NFL and the players who are themselves protesting the mistreatment of African Americans. In Tampa, a flag-waving Stand Up for America rally is scheduled outside the Raymond James Stadium to coincide with the start of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers-New York Giants NFL game on Sunday. And in Brooksville, a diner plans a Celebration of Patriotism event where patrons can get a free hot dog for burning NFL merchandise. Last Sunday, Bucks receiver DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans, the receivers, knelt during the national anthem before their game in Minneapolis, joining hundreds of other players, coaches, and owners as they protested what they see as oppression of black Americans. Jackson and Evans each held hands over their hearts as well in recognition of the nation's military, according to the Tampa Bay Times. The organizer of this Sunday's stadium protest outside the Bucs Stadium, Barbara Hazelden, is running for Pinellas County Commission. She's a co-founder of the Tea Party-affiliated South Pinellas 912 Patriots, and she's called the player protests shameful. The group says that in its protest this Sunday, it plans to support the flag, the Pledge of Allegiance, the national anthem. The group does not mention the Constitution in its press release. And President Trump's acting Homeland Security Secretary Elaine Duke says that the relief effort is under control in Puerto Rico following Hurricane Maria, but people on the island say help is scarce and disorganized and that food, water, fuel, they're all hard to find on the island of Puerto Rico. WMNF Sean Canan spoke with one resident in a San Juan suburb yesterday, Monica Casablanca, and this is what she told WMNF's Sean Canan about the situation right now in Puerto Rico.
What do you think the U.S. government's response has been so far, including President Trump?
There's been no response. It is the saddest thing you could possibly see days after the fact, and people are just literally dying. I never saw one National Guard. I never saw one police officer other than in the airport. There was never any vigilance by my house. There was nothing. It looks like a bomb went off. It looks like the atomic bomb went off. No drinking water. The water's coming on in the house, but it's on 1 minute, it's off the next. That water is not safe to drink, but it's very difficult to boil the water because there's very limited supply of gas for the propane tanks, and there's no electricity. So it's almost impossible to boil it unless you know how to, you know, light a fire.
So how is it that people are surviving without fresh drinking water, without electricity?
They're just, you know, right now, what we were doing, we were rationing everything. And, you know, you just have a limited amount per day per person.
What about hospitals? Did they have power?
Hospitals are very limited with power and as well as services.
How is communication there? Do people have mobile phones or landlines? Is any of that working?
Some of the landlines are working. Some of the phones work sporadically. So they don't work on a constant basis. So if I'm speaking, I could be in the same area, the same spot, and 5 minutes later, it won't work. At night, the temperature is just insane. You can't sleep. You can't think. People are getting angry. People are desperate because they don't have any cash. That's a big problem. So you can get some gas, but if you don't have any cash to buy the gas, then there that goes. I just want people to try to put themselves in the shoes of literally no water, no light, no security, very hot, and also surrounded by very dirty water. That's just going to be an epidemic for dengue. It's going to just translate into many other problems.
Well, that's Monica Casablanca. She was speaking with WMNF Sean Canan yesterday about the conditions that she was experiencing in a suburb of San Juan, Puerto Rico yesterday. So that's an eyewitness account from a resident there of what's going on. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. David writes this, thanks so much for bringing your guest on and raising awareness about the burn pits. I will look this up and see about buying an advance ticket. I was wondering, what does your guest think about Congress being dominated by millionaires? Those Congress critters don't have to worry about their own sons and daughters getting sick from military burn pits. The only one who gives a crap is John McCain. I think there are some other members of Congress that, if they knew about this, they would speak out. I don't think the only one that might care is John McCain, but you know, there should be, I think, some extensive hearings into, you know, the health problems. Because I only watched the trailer, but if the one guy that Gregory and I were talking about, whose voice you really couldn't hear in the trailer, if that one guy was subjected to burn pits and his illness is caused by burn pits, if you look at this guy, he is a walking human skeleton. And, you know, I don't know the background. I certainly don't know what else he might have been exposed to, but it is not normal when you see this guy in the film, which is called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Hi, Gary, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
Hey, Rob. Happy Friday. Great week on your show. I this is a little late in the week to call and I wish we could have a whole show about this, but I'm of the opinion that the United States military is a war crimes organization, a corporate servant, an imperial army, an empire's military. And stemming from that, I believe that anyone who volunteers for the U.S. military is not only putting themselves in terrible harm's way, as your guest was outlining, that the Pentagon you know, endangers its soldiers, and not just in the obvious ways that they're in war, but that they're creating moral harm for themselves by participating voluntarily in what our military does worldwide, which is 95% nothing good and usually very bad. So I notice even on MNF and other progressive liberal outlets, people seem to think that volunteer U.S. soldiers are good people and heroes, and they should be praised and applauded and given lots of veterans benefits, and that they're dying for our freedoms. I don't believe any of that.
Yeah. Well, Gary, but there are some people that, you know, the question of whether or not these wars are being fought to, you know, to defend our freedoms, I think that is a big issue. And I'm not sure any of the more modern wars, except World War II, has been fighting for our freedom. It's usually intervening in a civil war or an internal country dispute somewhere else. But there are people that, you know, based on what they get in high school, what they see on TV, they think, you know, that they are protecting our freedom. That's why I think they genuinely sign up. I mean, because they don't have access to the kind of information that you have access to. They don't listen to MNF. They're not reading the Quakers peace programs and all that. So yeah. I think there's a lot of honorable people that sign up for the military. We don't really have a robust debate in this country about U.S. foreign policy. We don't, for instance, Afghanistan and what's going on daily in Afghanistan is never on TV. We don't have a robust discussion. And then the discussion of whether or not we're actually fighting to protect ourselves because some Afghan warlord is going to take a boat over here and try to attack us, which is a silly idea. Most of the 9/11 attackers, you know, plotted in places like Venice, Florida, and Germany. But we don't have a debate. That debate never goes on Fox News, or it never goes on MSNBC, even PBS. Except after the war is long over, then it'll have a really good show about a war. But during the middle of a war, it rarely puts on the critics of the war when it's discussing it. Because people in this country are afraid and they're sheltered.
So they're brainwashed into thinking, number one, this is a good job with good benefits. You get to see the world. It's not a job. It's an adventure.
And there's a military. There's an economic draft. That is that some of the best. You know, we don't really pay for free stuff for college students. But if you go in the military, some of the best training in the military, you get great training in the military. And when you come out, you get GI benefits. So there is an economic draft. That is that if you're on the low end of the income scale, getting a job in the military looks pretty good.
Yeah, that's a key of it. I mean, we don't have a Peace Corps that's robustly funded so that people, as you say, who may not have the means to go to college or university or other training, they see the military as a last resort and a good resort because you've got health care, you get to travel, you get all this training, you get taken care of after you get out. I wish that we had I wish that we spent even a fraction of much money on giving these people an opportunity to join a peace giving, ecological restoration giving. They have a choice of signing up to go commit war crimes in countries that never would have harmed us.
Yeah, well, not everybody that's in the military commits war crimes, but you're right. Some
with it, don't you think?
Some do. Many don't. But I think you're right. I mean, to your bigger point, and that is, we do give a lot of benefits to people who are in the military, and people choose the military in order to get those benefits and in order to get that great training. But why don't we do that with every high school student? Why don't we do that with everybody who can't afford college to give them great training and great college education and say, we're going to be a better country if everybody is highly educated and highly trained?
Yeah, well, I know you've got other cars. I'll leave you with this bumper sticker that we used to see a lot during Vietnam. It said, what if they gave a war and nobody came?
All right, Gary, thanks a lot. Thanks for your views. Of course, if you've got different views, you're welcome to call us up at 813-239-9663. Our email address, here it is. Send your email to dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Sean in Tampa. Hi, Sean, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. The U.S. has a long history of fighting wars for corporations, for over sugar, and, you know, taking over countries. You know who General Smedley Butler is?
Yeah.
He wrote a book called War is a Racket. And basically, if you read that book, it outlines it all. We go to war for corporations that have interests in other countries. Many times, like you said, World War II is basically the exception. But we go to war to make money, and that's basically it.
Well, Sean, I think there's a lot to what you say, and I think it really needs to be debated. We never have that debate. If you watch NBC or CBS or Fox News, that debate never happens. And Smedley Butler's long been forgotten, except for people like you that understand the long arc of U.S. military history. But we need to start that debate. What have these wars? You know, for instance, you know, I was just talking to Dan Ruth about this. President Reagan once told us that we had to fear the Sandinistas in Nicaragua because they were going to come up through Harlingen, Texas, and invade the U.S. and take over. Well, I went to Nicaragua shortly after Reagan said that, and I met some of the soldiers. I looked at their planes. This was a ragtag army that couldn't get past Honduras. But yet we were all scared stiff, and the U.S. spent billions of dollars propping up the Contras and sending military advisors to that part of the world, places like Honduras and Nicaragua. But we never have the debate about whether or not what President Reagan said was true. We don't have the debate. Why did we spend all that money in Nicaragua? Why did we go to war in Iraq? You know, that war was debated a little bit before we got into it. We found out that Saddam Hussein didn't have nuclear weapons, and yet there's been no repercussions since. Dick Cheney and George Bush have gone on with their lives. I'm glad they're doing well. But, you know, there ought to be some investigation into why we spent trillions of dollars on the war in Iraq. We hear from Republicans all the time who are worried about deficit spending. Well, one of the biggest causes of the deficit is every time we go to war, we borrow money. And, you know, MNF is trying to at least, you know, through some of the programs we have, like Alternative Radio and this program, is to start that debate. But, you know, it's almost impossible to have that debate anywhere else in society on electronic media except for a place like MNF.
That's absolutely true. And if you bring it up, you're accused of being unpatriotic. The Contras could have been called terrorists. They were trying to overthrow a legitimate elected government. And Congress turned down the funding. Reagan went to Congress first, and they said no.
Yeah, even Congress saw that the Contras were not like our founding fathers, as President Reagan had said.
Certainly, everything Reagan did was illegal, and then he used Ollie North and did horrible things with trafficking to get money for the weapons that he sent down there.
Yeah, I think Republicans, you know, and I think they're sincere about this. They fear about what's going to happen to our kids by borrowing all this money. Well, remember, every time we go to war, every time we borrow money, and the most expensive thing the U.S. government does is not Social Security, it's not Medicare, it's not foreign aid, it's not welfare, for food stamps. The most expensive thing the U.S. government does is war and is the military, and we never have that debate.
We spend as much as the next 10 countries, most of which are allies.
All right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Sean, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. All right,
thank
so
you,
if you've got a different point of view, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Fran, who's in Largo. Hi, Fran. How are you?
I'm fine, and I agree with the last two callers, and I also wanted to say that I think this patriotism thing about going to war, becoming soldiers, is a trap for a lot of young men and women. The Vietnam vets, I've been watching the Vietnam series all past couple of weeks. The Vietnam vets realize that the ones that were protesting the war, that came back and protested the war through the medals and the Purple Hearts, they realized that. And it just seems to go on and on and on, these endless wars we have. It's like a meat grinder that people are put into, just an endless meat grinder of war. It just seems pointless to have these conventional type wars when we have nuclear weapons that could destroy the Earth, 50 times over. And yet we keep playing these games. Is it these rich men's games that they just love to play at war?
Friend, do you know, you've been watching the Vietnam series, do you know anybody alive today that still thinks the Vietnam War was a good thing? You know, let me just tell you a quick story. Is that I was looking at my shirts the other day. Don't ask me why. I've got some shirts. So I looked at my shirts, and I see that 5 or 6 of them are made in Vietnam.
Yes, I have clothing from there, too.
And, you know, do you think there's anybody alive today in the U.S. that thinks that the Vietnam War was a good idea? Because now we're doing business with Vietnam, and we're buying sneakers from them, and we're buying shirts, and we're buying pants, and we're buying ties.
I know.
But does anybody think that was worth the 2 million Vietnamese lives lost, the 58,000 American soldiers who were killed, and then the hundred thousand more or so that were maimed and injured in Vietnam? Does anybody think that war was worth it?
Not anybody that I know, no. And I mean, like I said, it's the same as it always was. Look at, we're in Afghanistan, we have the Iraq war, and it's just pointless, pointless, pointless. Maybe the last really patriotic war we had was World War II.
So,
my
friend
was a veteran of that. But even that, you know, it's once that was over with, we had to continue with Korea.
Friend, why do you know, the Afghanistan war has gone on for 16 years. Why do you think that we no longer debate war in this country? There is no forum on television that I can think of. And I may be wrong, but there is no forum where we debate whether or not the military budget is the right size. We only hear from President Trump, who says the military budget is too small. And I think that's okay, but we never hear from the other side. Why do you think there is no debate in this country?
I don't know. We've just gotten dumbed down as a society. Now, years ago during Vietnam, it was on television, all the protesters and everything, and that is what stopped the war. It took a hell of a lot of an effort. And it's just something that's, are we ready to start giving that effort again? That's what we have to do. Just give the effort. I heard Michael Moore just a little while ago on Amy Goodman, and he said, when you hear that Trump wants to get us into another war, just stop what you're doing and just be against it. You have to be against it. We cannot afford this. We cannot keep doing this. I mean, I don't know what he meant by if Trump wants to get us in another war, because damn it, we're in Afghanistan up to our,
I think it's pretty clear that the president, whether or not his advisors want it, but the president is talking irresponsibly toward North Korea. That you don't, you know, if there's a hornet's nest there, you don't poke it. There are better ways to take care of a hornet's nest, the smarter ways. Fran, thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Douglas, who's in Largo. Hi, Douglas. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Just an idea that I haven't heard, at least not lately, on the show about the military. I'm an 11-year veteran of the Army. Got out in 92. And one of the things that, it's not published doctrine to my knowledge, but one of the strong feelings I got out of my service was that from the military standpoint, it behooves the military to always be engaged in some sort of conflict. This helps prevent the military being left with a cadre of senior NCOs, field grade, and definitely company grade officers who have no combat experience. So having a constant cadre of senior military folks who would be actually fighting on the ground, who have combat experience, serves the military mission in the long run, at least from the military standpoint. So I totally agree in the idea that we go to war for economic reasons. But I think there's also a bit of an agenda, at least within the ranks of the military, to, you know, to have a well-trained and combat-seasoned group of leaders.
Well, Douglas, I think that makes a lot of sense. I want to go back to this, one of our earlier callers, Gary, said. Gary was kind of dismissive of people that joined the military, and he and I think disagreed on that point. Why did you join the military?
I joined the military back in 1982. My family, there was a little bit of history. My father had been in the Marine Corps in World War II. My father was in World War II. My grandfather fought in with the American Army in World War I. My great-great-great-grandfather was in the Civil War. So I grew up with this kind of, no one was a career military person, but there was that bit of a mystique of the military in my life, and I'm sure it helped form me a little bit. But primarily in 1982, we were in an economic slump, and I was looking for work. I was looking for a way to travel. I was looking for educational benefits, kind of not unusual, not kind of along the lines that you've talked about earlier.
And Douglas, did you ever see action?
No, I actually, I was involved in, I was in intelligence, and I was stationed overseas. I was doing strategic counterterrorism collection. Mm-hmm. So I was not getting shot at, but it was a strategic real-world mission all the time.
How were the benefits after you got out?
Well, because I didn't, I was in for 11 years. I did not retire. So really, the only benefits I had were, it was at that time a version of the GI Bill, which I was able to get my master's degree with. And so I can't complain about it. There's just no real benefits after that.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Well, Douglas, thanks a lot. Thanks. And thanks for adding to the conversation.
Thank you.
All right. Great to hear from you. And you are listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Let's go to Mary in Riverview. Hi, Mary. You're
Hi.
On.
I have a question. The Kurdish people just voted, I think 92%, to become their own state or their own country. And everybody's against it. But my question is, why are we even involved in making that decision? Shouldn't that be that country's decision? Isn't that what caused all the problem in the beginning? Is that we made not us, you know, not Americans, but the British and the French made all the lines as to what country was going to get what. And now the Kurdish people are trying to make their own country, and nobody wants it, not even Europe, not U.S., not anyone. I don't understand. What am I missing?
Well, I think we should do a whole show on the Kurdish question, because it's important, it's complicated. As you're suggesting, Mary, they voted democratically to secede from places, the eastern part of Syria and the northern part of Iraq and the eastern part of Turkey. So it's an important question, and it's about democracy, isn't it? I mean, if we stand for democracy, we should support their democratic leanings, right?
I just, it's beyond my comprehension to understand why we're saying no, they can't do it.
But I do think that there's some nuance, and you know, frankly, I've never done a show on the Kurdish question, but I've read a lot about it, so maybe I can find an expert that can come on and
talk about the complexity. I knew you would do it.
Okay. Mary, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right, and let's go to Charlene and Rich in Tampa. Hi, Charlene and Rich. We just have 30
Hi.
Seconds. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. The Democracy Now this morning with Michael Moore, he really gave us our marching orders. That's going to be on at 5 o'clock on our computers, right?
Yeah, on HD3.
Yeah. Listen to the source. And then tomorrow, you know, on the Internet, Democracy Now, because he really lays it out. You probably heard it, Rob. He says we're like the French underground. Trump will lead us to war, and he just really gives us our marching orders. So I think that should really go viral. Thanks for all your help.
All right. Thanks a lot. Yeah, Michael Moore was great on Democracy Now! This morning. Of course, he's doing that limited stint on Broadway. I really wish I could get up there and see him on Broadway. Gina writes this, their lobbies are well-financed regarding the military-industrial complex. She says their lobbies are well-financed, aggressive, and nobody wants to sound unpatriotic, but you are right. Somebody needs to speak up, writes Gina. And Paul from Tampa writes, Hillary and Democrats supported the war in Iraq and silenced people like Sanders and Dennis. So That's that person's email. Thank you, Paul, for saying that. And Sherry writes this, I believe the military-industrial complex has succeeded and used the right-wing media to control when anyone speaks out against it. Well, we're out of time. If you want to comment about today's show, you're welcome to call up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play those comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Now, coming up next, Daniel Ruth from the Tampa Bay Times is hosting the Midpoint program, as he always does on a Friday.